The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax. Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Longtime listeners, if you're listening to this the evening it comes out, then you have made it to Thursday. Congratulations all around. We are going to hear from our fellow conspiracy realist. We're going to have a follow-up on the beginning of a conversation we had about fertility rates and paying people to become parents. We're going to learn about disruptions in the organ trade, not the way you might think, and not the organ trail. But before we do any of that, we thought we'd dip our toes in with a delightful piece of correspondence we got from an old friend.
Yes, indeed. I'm just going to jump right into the email. This is a lot of fun. Hey, Ben, the octopi sympathizer, Matt the dad, and Noel, the guy who refuses to play Control for some reason, even though he can put hours into Skyrim. Okay, I see you. It's your not-so-British bank robber. Ben, you pointed out that we have heard from this individual before, specifically relating to a period in their life as a professional bank robber.
Yes, it's great to hear from you again.
Yeah, this is from Jace, by the way. Although there's been some great heist and fake identity stories lately that are right up my alley, I'm actually writing in about your haunted places and objects piece. My house is definitely haunted, but not in a stereotypical way. My wife got a puppy in the first year of our marriage, and that dog was consistently by her side. Unfortunately for us, that dog was a super flatulator. A killer of the SBD kind. For the uninitiated out there, that means silent but deadly. It didn't matter if I was cooking dinner or trying to relax on the couch and cuddle up to a movie, this dog was there and dropping it like it was hot. So we would constantly have to recoil in disgust at the foul smell and fan it away and say the dog's name aloud in scolding. No. I wish we had gotten the dog's name, but that's okay. Here's where it gets crazy. This dog passed away recently. Sorry to hear that. But it has not fully moved on. My house is haunted by its presence. And in the most loving way it knew how in life, it has continued in death. My wife and I will be in a room together when suddenly that same putrid gas smell will appear. Out of habit, we both start to berate the dog, but it's no longer alive. So how can that be possible? Creepy, right? The even creepier thing, it only happens when my wife is in the room. The dog continues to follow her around the house in death as it did in life. Ghost? Impression of its love? Or something sinister? Okay, we're going to get to that. I'm no ghost hunter with a TV show, so I don't have the answers. A lot of those ghost hunters, the TV shows don't either. So don't feel too bad. But I'll leave you with that. It's Taco Tuesday, so I better get started on making the beans. That's funny. Cheers, Jace. P.S. The dog also went through a phase of pooping in my house shoes. So if that happens again, I'll be sure to give you an update. P.P.S. I know you are all dads. I didn't mean to leave you guys out by singling Matt out as the dad. Ben is a cat dad. Noel has a daughter. But why can't he just play that super fun game already? So that's what comes to mind first for him in the intro.
I've got quick thing. And I know this is maybe an unpopular opinion, but I do not consider myself a father to my pets.
Fair. That is your prerogative.
Who do you 100%. Consider yourself a father to? I'm just joking.
So, right. So this may be a conversation for another day. But what a cool letter. You know, we talked about how memory is so often encoded in our olfactory sensations. Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. So smell makes sense that it could be, for those who believe in an afterlife, it could be a means of communication. And of course, a smell can instantly take you back to a point earlier in life. I kind of have a theory, a possible
theory. Oh, I've got one.
I want to float it, but I don't want to mess with anybody's relationship. You guys, is it possible that maybe Jace's partner was the one farting the whole
time? She was blaming it on the dog. Tale as old as time.
Is it possible? I'm not going to make these rampant accusations, but
more like
is
a
it
fartner, am I right?
I'm sorry. Like this one. Let me give you mine and then let's compare and contrast because I think that's a really good possibility. Or it's Jason. He's just having a little fun with us. What if it's a natural gas leak somewhere in the home and it was never the dog or a human creating that sulfurous smell? Because that's usually the smell I associate with the term SBD when it's mm-hmm. silent, you can't really hear anything. And it's like that sulfury smell.
Yeah.
Well, that would be associated with a natural gas leak because it's put in there on purpose for you to smell it when it's leaking in your home. So like if there's a small leak somewhere or a sewer backup problem, but maybe a natural gas leak. I was just going to say, Jace, you should get your house checked.
Bro, I have to say, I was Googling, you know, ghost smells. That was my term. And first of all, the first thing that comes up is the idea of phantom smells, which is a thing that happens. It's sort of olfactory hallucinations, right? Like people often who are experiencing stroke or some similar, cognitive kind of event.
I'm smelling that way. Almonds.
I smell bitter almonds or I smell burnt toast or burning hair or whatever it might be. You hear that a lot. Also, the smell of sulfur is often associated with infernal spirits. Brimble. The smell of the pit, you know, the burning smell of the abyss, the ninth circle of hell. So there's a couple options there. Maybe you guys are having a collective stroke on the regular, or you've got a demon, in which case that's no good. You need to get you to a priest real quick to exorcise that house. Matt, I think you might have nailed it on the head, as it were. One of the things I found on Reddit was somebody asking a question, typical smell during ghost encounters. Has anyone experienced that? I'll just give the excerpt that is appropriate here. I've always seen in movies or heard of the rotting smell when there's a haunting. Has anyone experienced this? If yes, then what kind of smell was it? I recently moved to a place, and since then, I'm unable to sleep because of unfounded fear. A few days in a row, when I woke up after midnight, there was this weird smell in the hallway, which disappeared in the morning but came back in the night. Nobody cleaned the house or took out the trash. It just disappeared. And the source of the smell is definitely inside the house. Even if this doesn't sound paranormal to you, I just want to know if someone who has experienced some smell along with paranormal stuff and what kind of smell. To which somebody responded, I believe in and have experienced plenty of paranormal phenomena in my time, but this sounds disturbingly similar to a slow gas leak. This would also cause feelings of paranoia and the unfounded fear you describe. For your own safety and health, I would strongly encourage you to test for gases and or molds in your new house before assuming this is supernatural. I think that's sound advice. But I do like the idea of, to your point, Ben, of sense memory. We always talk about how in a lot of ways, whatever your beliefs in the afterlife might be, or in, you know, spiritual things, that hauntings often can be attributed to sort of lingering energy of some kind, or a place perhaps that has experienced an inordinate amount of sad
farts.
Things.
Oh,
and
sorry.
Farts and or sad things.
Farts of the
and there can be some kind of a vibe. You know, we often talk on the show about, you know, the idea of vibes and whether or not you're someone who, you know, signs up for more spiritual kind of ways of thinking about things. I think we've all caught a vibe before. I think it's something that's pretty common to the human condition. So I think the idea of a smell being associated with a vibe and in some way kind of permeating a space where something took place, I could see that as being a thing, but I am with you, Matt. I think maybe, Jace, it's time to, you know, call an inspector out there and make sure that you don't have some sort of slow gas leak, because that can be very, very dangerous, not only because of igniting a flame, perhaps, but also, you know, it can poison you.
There's also one thing to investigate. First off, I like that in both of these theories, we're arguing that your dog is innocent, whether alive or beyond the grave.
Beans didn't do it.
Right. Justice for beans. Hashtag it. So there's this other aspect, though, with a gas leak. A low level natural gas leak is not going to be harmful immediately. But if you have long term exposure, and if Matt, if your theory is correct, then we'd be talking about long term exposure to some regard, then there would also be physical symptoms. Jace, I'm interested to hear whether you and your partner have experienced nausea, dizziness, severe headaches, right? Or loss of focus. Actually, when I'm naming these sound like conditions of being alive in 2024.
True.
But that would be one of your first ways to really dig into the theories that we're proposing here.
Yeah, and apparently you can check for this yourself. You can just get a CO2 detector and check for a potential gas leak without even having, I think you can like rent one or something. So one side effect, though, of CO2 poisoning is an irrational fear or sensations or feelings of dread and paranoia that can be very similar or along the same lines of what one might experience if they felt as though they were being haunted.
Mm. A fart in the dark, and you're to blame,
no,
darling.
No,
you give beans a bad name.
See, I was about to say, beans is not to blame. Possibly, though, it could be a ghost dog fart. Who are we to say? We're just here to suss out the possibilities, y'all. That's what we're here to do. But, you know, often we do hear of people associating a scent with a loved one, perhaps your grandmother's perfume, you know, or the smell of, your father's cologne or something like that. And because I think those sense memories are so strong, I think we can possibly hallucinate those, you know, if you really associate a lost loved one with that smell, and then you're in a place where they spend a lot of time or where you have a lot of memories of that person, I can't see why you might not be experiencing some sort of smell hallucination. I don't know. What do you guys think?
When my dog Buddy passed, I think it's exactly that. Like, rationally, it's just the smell of the places where he was a lot in the house. But man, I swear, after he was gone, I smelled like that smell when he'd been outside for quite a while, kind of like that a dog got hot, got heated up, and it's kind of smells bad, but it was a very specific smell, and I would smell it as soon as I walked into the threshold of the house. And you know, it's my rational mind knows that's just me walking into the place where he was a lot. There's probably still dander and hair in there in some corners that I haven't cleaned yet. But in my mind, in the moment, it's like, oh, is Buddy in here? You know?
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I agree with you guys. Smell is something that you can, I hesitate to use the word hallucinate because of the somewhat unfair connotations, but we can do this right now. If you're playing along at home, if you're not driving or operating heavy machinery, then close your eyes. Think of someone you love. They don't have to be alive, they don't have to be dead, but as you think about them, don't just think of their face, think of the sound of their voice, the texture of their hand, or the fabrics that they wore, and then I guarantee you, your mind will present to you another sensory stimuli, which will be a smell.
No question about it. And I know I've told this story before. I'll just tell the quick abbreviated version for anyone that hasn't heard it. And for anyone that has, I'll try to get through it quick. But
you can open your eyes now.
Okay.
The experiment worked. I didn't want to leave everybody hanging.
No,
but thank you for playing
along. I played along and it absolutely worked. But there was a time where I lost a friend and a girl that I dated for a very long time. Just after she passed, we were sitting in her car, my girlfriend at the time's car, and it was a very foggy kind of misty night. And on the inside of her windshield, she blew on it. And our friend's signature was on the inside of the windshield. And in the moment of that moment, in both of our minds, we both were overcome with emotion. And we were like, there's nothing that this could be other than our deceased friend reaching out from beyond the grave to communicate with us. But the reality of it was that these were late teenage, early 20s girls. They were high school friends. And she, you know, that's just something that people do. You write your name in the condensation on the inside of a car windshield. And there are oils on your fingers that stick around, you know, and this may well have been done a week or more, you know, prior to us experiencing this. But in the moment, it couldn't be anything but a experience with the supernatural. But then a little bit later, thinking about it, we realized what it actually was. So anyway, Jace, thanks so much for the story. It's a nice twist on these types of spooky tales. So we appreciate it. And we'll take a quick break and hear a word from our sponsor and then come back to you with some more listener mail.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back, guys. I did a terrible job. I gave that song a bad name when I tried to quote the lyrics from You Give Love a Bad Name by John Bon Jovi. But there is a lyric in there because I'm looking at him right now. It says, whoa, you're a loaded gun. Whoa, there's nowhere to run. That just reminds me of somebody who's got SBDs locked and loaded and has you trapped in a room with them. There's no one can save me. The damage is already done. See? Oh, whoops. All right. Let us jump into a message from Skippy the Prozac Elf. Here we go.
Good evening, gentlemen. This is, well, you can call me Skippy the Prozac Elf. I am a longtime listener, first-time caller, and I was listening to your recent listener mail episode where you were talking about the ethics of cloning specifically for the purposes of generating one's own organs. And I would like to point out a article recently in the MIT Technology Review, as I make this phone call, it's about a week old now, where a company named Ligenesis is doing injections into people's lymph nodes using a combination of novel therapies and stem cells, to grow a new liver inside the patient. Eventually, they hope to be able to do kidneys and pancreas as well. And as a type 2 diabetic, the idea of growing a second functional pancreas is particularly of interest to me. Anyway, I love the show very much, and I thank you for years and years of thought-provoking episodes. Take care, guys.
Wow. Wow. Thank you so much, Skippy the Prozac Elf. Very kind words there at the end. Guys, we had that conversation about cloning. What do you think about even the possibility, before we get into it, of some kind of injection into a human that could cause you to grow new organs with stem cells?
I think the science is on the way. You know, it's just out of the current popular grasp. I would argue, if not necessarily this method of application, the idea of a regrowing organs is nigh inevitable at this point through one method or another.
We certainly know of certain species of animals that can regrow organs or regrow appendages, you know, like a tail and on certain kinds of lizards. There's a David Cronenberg film called Crimes of the Future that is sort of like this dystopian world where performance art has become the highest form of kind of art and science in the whole world. And there are these like elite class of performance artists that through various means of internal surgeries and injections actually grow new organs and then have them removed. They remove them from themselves as part of this like performance art thing.
Oh. And,
yeah. It's a really difficult movie to watch. I'm not certain kinds of body horror I can deal with, but I don't really like cutting. And there's a lot of cutting in this movie, but it's got Viggo Mortensen in it, and it's kind of a dark comedy, and it really does deal with sort of this idea of like how if we change to a certain degree, are we still human? That kind of question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Clearly, I think we're all on the same page here, folks, and you listening along at home. It's an ideal first date movie. You know, you really get a sense of the person that you're meeting. It's like up there with that time I accidentally went to Requiem for a Dream on a first date.
And then had pancakes or something afterwards?
Then went to Applebee's.
Yeah, okay.
Shout out Paul Deccan.
Yeah.
I think you're raising some fantastic points here because some form of this science or some application thereof is almost inevitable. And we know that every year there are so many organizations or startups that sell what we would call vaporware, right? They get a bunch of angel investors and then it turns into a jam tomorrow, never jam today situation. But Matt, the sense that I am getting from our dear Prozac Elf here is that there's some real sand to this, correct?
Yeah, well, the Elf hipped us to an MIT Technology Review article from August 25th, 2022. At least that's the one that I found because we were just kind of searching around. But this is the one I found by Jessica Hamzalu. And the title is, "This company is about to grow new organs in a person for the first time. A volunteer with severe liver disease will soon undergo a procedure that could lead them to grow a second liver." And it goes through and talks about some PR materials that were put out by this company, Ligenesis, which if you want to look it up, it is spelled Ligenesis.
What is their stock symbol?
I don't know.
Not kidding. Could be a good buy. Just saying.
Noel's over here like, ooh. I don't know if they're traded. Maybe they are. I have no idea. I have no info on that. All I know is that Back in August of 2022, they were talking about the first trial as an individual human being in Massachusetts, Boston, Massachusetts, that is going to try the treatment out. This thing that Skippy was describing as injecting with stem cells and whatever other proprietary materials that they're injecting a person with into their lymph nodes. And then somehow magically, through science actually, the patient would grow a new liver. And I say a new liver because that's how it's described initially there. But if you move through time, just a little ways to 2023, there is a PR piece, a public relations piece that's put out through PR Newswire by Ligenesis that discusses how they just raised $19 million in what they call Series A2 funding, along with this other lab, to actually go into clinical trials and to actually move this thing forward, move the needle, if you will. And then you get to the final one I was looking at, guys, is from April 2nd of this year, 2024. And this is when Ligenesis puts out another PR piece through PR Newswire saying that now they have the first person going into a phase 2A clinical trial of this, what they call regenerative cell therapy for patients with end-stage liver disease. And it is crazy, y'all. It is not just growing a second liver. According to Ligenesis, the patient would grow several livers, if not six livers, in their body, just tiny little ones inside those lymph nodes, because the cell therapy that they are injecting into these lymph nodes with the stem cells actually changes the lymph node into liver cells, and it builds one at each lymph node inside the body. So six new livers in places where the liver is not. You know,
right. First question would be, do we know how this affects the function of the lymph nodes?
I guess they are no longer lymph nodes. They are now liver nodes.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's still better than dying from liver disease, right?
Yeah.
So I'm looking at the website and thank you, Matt, and thank you, Prozac L, for sending this. It looks like they've already done a lot of modeling and small and large animal experimentation. So moving to these clinical trial phases, that does mean human, right? Just to be clear?
Yes. Human clinical trials.
Rubber's hitting the road. All right.
Noding up. But guys, look, I'm sure this is a great company filled with awesome human beings who are brilliant, who understand the science behind this, sure. The math behind all this, yeah. They're just working it all out. But if you go to their website and you go to the science section of their website, there's a little thing you could click on that says Our Science. I'm going to read this out loud and just tell me how you feel when I read this out loud. Quote, "Our allogenic cell therapies leverage the biology of the lymph node to engraft, proliferate, and form functional ectopic organs that recapitulate the native organ's function."
Sounds mm-hmm. like they're using a lot of fancy words to make it sound like they know what they're talking about.
It sounds like it's for investors who have a bunch of money and go, "Oh my God, this is insane. What is that even?
If I'm giving you this many millions of dollars, some of these words in the mission statement better have at least three syllables."
Yeah. Do they really have to drop recapitulate? I mean, I come on. Ectopic organs, maybe, but yeah.
It is correct. Like, ectopic just means, for anybody who's familiar with the situation, like an ectopic pregnancy, that means the thing is happening outside of the area where it's supposed to happen. So mm-hmm. these livers formed by lymph nodes, these mini livers, these JV livers are ectopic in that point. And recapitulate is kind of one of those words in English that's unnecessarily confusing because it means a couple different things. Like, you could make a summary. You can repeat something, but I think here they mean to accurately mimic or repeat the action of the original liver.
Yeah, but right? I agree. But I think the use of that word begs credulity just a tiny little bit. And I was only half joking about the stock thing. It turns out they are not publicly traded, by the way.
Not yet. Get in early.
Yeah, no, I mean, they are merging with another company called Ajax, I found. And even that as a name of a company, Ajax Therapeutics, screams I don't know, kind of pie in the sky, kind of tech, like biotech. Ajax Therapeutics is focused on the development and commercialization of novel therapeutics targeting human aging. We are building upon the foundation of our proprietary technology, such as PureStem, trademark, and induced tissue regeneration, lowercase i, TR, trademark, to develop innovative medicines designed to address some of the largest unsolved problems in aging.
I mean, you need that profit, though. I mean, you need that profit motive often to propel this kind of research.
That's very true. That is, you're right. Profit is not equal. We should doubt their motives.
But I mean, we should be honest, right? To guys' points, like we do know, at least according to their website, I haven't read this stuff, but they do seem to have peer-reviewed research, and they are bringing this to market. But there are so many other questions. Like, what is, Matt, do we know whether there is a kill switch or a handbrake to say we're only going to grow X amount of these new ectopic livers? Could somebody die from having too many mini livers?
I don't think you can have too many mini livers. I don't know.
Wait, and I'm sorry. You're basically like a farm for livers. It's not like they're hooked up to your nervous system. They're just growing on you, right?
Like yes.
Like in your nodes.
Yeah. So this is really important. Let's go through this really quickly. This is from the PR they put out in early April here. I'm going to read part of this. Their biologic therapy is created starting from donated, otherwise unmatched livers. So a donated liver that doesn't have a person that it's going to, they take basically the stem cells or the cells out of that liver, right? And then they have a current good manufacturing practice process that carefully isolates and suspends hepatocytes in a solution ready for transplantation
into
the patient's upper abdominal lymph nodes. So like up on your upper body here, and they use an endoscopic ultrasound, a minimally invasive approach. But then the lymph nodes act as in vivo bioreactors that make those, the liver cells, they're using the words again, engraft, proliferate, and then eventually generate a functional ectopic liver tissue, like the stuff that you would need to make a liver to become a liver.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd be able to take those out and put one in you, I think, is the idea.
I see. Okay.
Maybe. I'm wrong here. I think that's how it would work, or maybe that's not how it would work. Maybe it would actually function as a liver in the lymph node places. You would just have several small ones rather than one large one.
Right. It's a asymmetrical solution to the problem of organ donation.
Well, yeah, imagine how many people it could potentially save, like for real.
Sure, yeah.
No. I just want to add one last little thing about the other company that I was talking about, Ajax. They actually changed their name to Serena Therapeutics in 2024, but there's one sentence on here that just really has me kind of, I don't know. It says here, the ITR was one of the technologies, the trademark technologies, which is induced tissue regeneration. ITR is our revolutionary longevity platform aiming to unlock cellular immortality and regenerate capacity to reverse age-related changes in the body. So these companies are aligned in some form. I got to do more digging. It does seem that they have merged in some way, but I don't want to steer anybody wrong. But there definitely have been press releases indicating that there is connection between these companies. So
they're also, you know, they're part of a larger trend, which surely you notice as well, Skippy. We are past the phase where everything sounds like vaporware in anti-aging technology and in this particular genre of biotech. It's on the way. One thing to do that's really interesting, if you ever have some free time, folks, and you don't want to go out and spend money, check out these companies we're mentioning and then do a little digging into their board of directors and learn where their executives are coming from, and then learn what other things those executives are doing, because there's a heck of a lot of Venn diagrams when it comes to boards of directors. I think, okay, overall, this sounds like a good thing. Of course, you know, once the trials are occurring, it may well happen that they run into something unintended, right? And that may be an insurmountable obstacle, or hopefully more likely, they run into something that might be a plot twist that might change part of their approach, but they're still able to get this across the finish line. I mean, this could extend the quality of life and the quantity of life for millions of people. I think that's really cool. And I just hope that when something like this happens, when it reaches market, as the investors like to say, I hope that it doesn't become a palliative only for the wealthy.
Yeah, really hope so, because it could be incredible. I was just looking at one of the chairman of the board of directors at Ligenesis, Mr. Mellon, fascinating character on several boards.
Yeah. Which doesn't make him bad.
Nope. But he did publish a book in 2005 called Wake Up, Survive and Prosper in the Coming Economic Turmoil.
This guy loves New Zealand. How many passports do you think he has?
Oh, man, at least six.
Handful.
Wow.
Six deep.
In 2020, he wrote a book called Moose Law, M-O-O-S Law, An Investor's Guide to the New Agrarian Revolution.
A little snake oily sounding to me, guys.
Interesting. I don't know. We're going to find out. Only time and those hepatocytes will tell. So, gentlemen, I think that's all from this one. Thank you so much, Skippy the Prozac Elf. Be careful with the dosages there, and we will be right back with more messages from you.
Appreciate your liver, folks.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We have returned. We have one piece of correspondence here from Phoebe, which is representative of several other communications we got in the wake of something we talked about briefly on a previous Strange News, which is the story of private South Korean companies paying families or paying their employees to have children. There's an underwear company that gives you like the equivalent of $22,400 a piece for the first two. And then there is a construction company that gives you the equivalent of like $70,000. Just pop out one. And there's a lot of context here. We mentioned, yes, declining birth rates in what we would call the, you know, the quote unquote developed world. We also, I think, briefly alluded to just how hyper competitive the culture of South Korea can be overall, you know, the tremendous amount of pressure put on people from their first days of school all the way into their adult life and retirement. One thing we didn't mention is this, and we're going to share this letter from Phoebe, and then we'll discuss some of the factors at play here. Phoebe says, "Hey guys, longtime listener here. You can call me Phoebe. When you were talking about the Korean company that was giving out a bonus for having kids, I was hoping you would mention the 4B movement happening there. The movement," says Phoebe, "is basically women opting out of dating, marriage, and babies." The words for these all start with B in Korean. "As a result of sexual assault and harassment being so prevalent, especially with things like the nth rooms in Japan, women feel like it's dangerous to bring a new life into this world where these Korean men and lawmakers are turning a blind eye to the violence happening to women. Anyhow, thank you." And this is just one of the pieces of correspondence we received regarding this. Now, had you guys heard of the 4B movement before?
This is new to me.
Same.
Yeah, it's something I think it picked up in the West. A lot of people on TikTok and Twitter started paying attention to it around 2019. It was propagating through various social media accounts, but it will be described often as a, quote, radical feminist movement. And the 4Bs, or the 4 No's, are the following. 1, no sex with men. 2, no child rearing. 3, no dating men. And 4, no marriage with men. So,
ouch.
Yeah. So it's like, hey,
stings.
We're fine without, you know, all your mess, your baggage, your threats.
Is there a word for supporting the meaning behind or the reason to have a movement, but also fundamentally don't want it to happen because you're one of those people who isn't like the people that they're fighting against? We need to come up with a word for that.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we
okay.
do, because what you just said was incomprehensible to me.
Oh, are
you
serious?
No, it's like a I'm joking. I just mean it's a lot. That's well, like, you're right. It's
I agree.
Hard to describe.
Like, totally down, and I agree with the reasoning behind all of this and why you would do that and self-fulfillment and all that stuff, but also like, some of us are okay.
Right.
Well, maybe there's a better way, right?
I mean, maybe may I quickly say something here?
Yes,
please do so.
Yeah, I just want to say that I think that one framework that can be worthwhile here, from what I know about the 4B movement, is to think about it as sort of a form of protest to make the government and these other entities pay attention to these issues and do something to fix it. And the idea that protest is supposed to inherently be disruptive, there's a quote that I can't remember who said it, but something about asking nicely to get your quote like oppressors to do something differently, not working and having to totally. Do something a little bit stronger. Heard. So I think that, at least like I said, from what I've read, viewing the 4B movement as sort of a form of protest to like, we won't do this until these issues are fixed. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily like we hate all men and women to right. die, which I can't speak because I'm not there. So I can't, you know, speak, but I just think that that's just sort of a slightly different way of looking at it.
It's really valid and reframes my whole thinking about it, frankly. I mean, no, you nailed it.
Thank you so much for that, Doc, because that is something that kind of came up in our off-air conversation as well. Like the way we're seeing this, there's so much to get into here, but the way we're seeing this presented in the West, we have to be very careful with this, right? None of us are living in South Korea, you know, and it's perhaps easier, dangerously so, for Westerners to read stories about this protest movement, things like that, the fight for equality. You see it happening, you think about it in terms of another society, another country. You other the problem, and in doing so, run the very real risk of ignoring the continuing problems that exist in your own neck of the woods, right?
You know, I just was doing a little cursory Googling, and I found a really cool article that I'd love to dig into on The Cut, called A World Without Men, The Women of South Korea's 4B Movement Aren't Fighting the Patriarchy, They're Leaving It Behind Entirely. And there's a great pull quote, I think, that sums up the cultural aspect of this that makes it so unique. In their view, Korean men are essentially beyond redemption, and Korean culture on the whole is hopelessly patriarchal, often downright misogynistic. And I do think, you know, there's parts of that you could certainly apply to American culture as well, patriarchal culture as well. But there it seems to be much more, even more extreme than what we have here.
I like that you're bringing this up, because this is one of the primary things I pulled as well. So thanks to Anna Louise Sussman, right in The Cut, March 8th, 2023. This is a tough thing for a lot of people to read, because there are in-depth stories of female identifying residents of South Korea who have just had terrible, terrible, terrible things occur to them. And that, to be clear, are absolutely not their fault. They're all innocent people victimized by a large scale blindness, really. And we know that this is the 4B is the descendant of another movement called Escape the Corset Movement in 2016, which kind of inspired 4B.
Escape the Corset?
Escape the Corset. The word corset here is kind of like a metaphor for the social forces repressing women in that country.
Well sure, even the history of the corset is incredibly misogynistic. I mean, maybe at least I'm sure there are some women that enjoyed wearing a corset, I suppose, but it was certainly foisted upon women by the male gaze, right? Like, it's like, we need you to look this certain way, have this certain figure. Therefore, we will, you know, insist that you wear these very constricting garments that are not pleasant at all, or, you know, tantamount to like abuse in a lot of ways.
Mm, yeah. And we see also that the 4B movement, by its own description, is meant to be, like you were saying, Doc, it's a protest as well. Like, think of it that way, in that framework. Think of it also as an oppositional force to the traditionally incredibly patriarchal state of South Korea, you know. And for people who are part of this movement, part of this protest, what they're saying is the state, including the giant corporations, the chaebol, including, you know, like the everybody from the local legislators to Samsung on down, they are only viewing women's bodies and reproductive abilities as tools for the future of the state, which gets very authoritarian.
Can I jump in with one more thing here?
Yes, please do, Doc.
Yeah, one more thing that I think is sort of noteworthy about, for example, the incidence of intimate partner violence being significantly higher in South Korea, something like 41.5%. which is higher than the global average. And then also the president that was recently elected there said that he was going to dismantle the Ministry for Gender Equality, or saying that he wanted to. And sort of this, in addition to the actual issues that are impacting them that they're protesting against, also the sort of gaslighting of them saying this is not actually an issue. And the president has said something about feminism being to blame for the low birth rate, instead of actually addressing acknowledging the problems that they're trying to speak out against.
That's like corporations like creating recycling to pivot the blame of pollution onto, you know, consumers, basically.
To be even more crass, tell me what you all think about this. Is it not kind of like saying our nation has a house fire problem, so to combat that, I'm getting rid of all the fire stations?
It's wild.
That'll be the problem.
It's a lot. I'm not familiar with this issue until now. I want to do some more digging into it. I really appreciate, Alexis, you bringing up the idea of this as a protest kind of movement, more than it is like this is the way it has to be for everyone and all people. And if you're not on board with this hard line kind of attitude towards men, then you're not, you know, doing it right. I think that's maybe what hit Matt and I, you know, weirdly initially, but no, I totally get it. And it makes a lot of sense.
We also know, Doc, you and I were talking about this. We also know that, again, the point I don't want to miss is that it is all too easy to look at this and say this is happening somewhere else. But Doc, you and I had like spent time thinking, we were talking to each other. You rightly pointed out, you were like, the gender wage gap is everywhere too, right? And the United States is no exception, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because that's also one of the things that's listed as being part of the inspiration for the 4B movement is the gender like pay wage gap being the highest in the developed world there in South Korea at like 31 cents on the dollar. But it's actually like when you get to the United States, it's not that much different. And then also when you add the intersectionality of the pay wage gap between like Hispanic women or Black women or Indigenous women, you know, so yeah, it's one of those things where we can sort of look at this as a microcosm of something that's happening with different levels of extremeness in other places.
And maybe you can help us out as well, folks, because Codename Doc, Matt Knoll, and your faithful correspondent have been trying to think of a country where some version of this is not occurring.
Of course, you know, we have a patriarchy problem right here in the U.S. of A., no question about it. And as I think gotten to the point where it's maybe better than it has been in the past, but it's certainly always room to improve that. But I was just looking up like one aspect of South Korean culture that I'm a huge fan of, and I think we all are the films. You know, there's some incredible directors and wonderful films out of South Korea. I just looked up the stat. I was wondering how many, you know, women directors of a certain scale there are. And I saw an article here from the Korea Jung-ang Daily saying that only one of 35 Korean films of a certain scale was directed by a woman last year.
Don't even get me started on those statistics in America, because I have a lot of.
No, I know. I know a lot of it is lip service. I know it is. And, you know, I'm not saying it's good, but I'm saying it's at least there's more than one. I don't know.
Yeah, but there's something like, you know, 20 to 1 here in terms of films that are directed by a woman versus a man. So that's only sort of the thing that we can look at and say, okay, yeah, in South Korea, they're saying that the instance of domestic partner or like intimate violence is at 41%, but the global is at 30%. That's right. Still pretty high, you know? That's like a third. That means like a third of intimate partner relationships have some sort of intimate partner violence involved. So, yeah, so that's just sort of the thing in terms of thinking about like what they're doing and what they're speaking out against. And like, yeah, it's bad there. And that's why they're doing this. But also, it's not necessarily miles better.
Mm-mm. Right.
Mm-mm. No. And I certainly elsewhere. Wasn't implying that it was.
No, I don't think I don't think we're. Yeah, we're also, if anything, we're showing a wider lens here. I don't know enough about cinematography to know if that joke works. But you know who does? Codename Doc Holliday.
Yeah, and Doc, I just wanted to add, in the same article that I was just referencing, zero women cinematographers in this crop of films that they're talking
about. Yeah, we're like 4% here, basically.
I know. Yeah, no, I know.
And as you can tell, folks, we have much more to explore and learn about this this story. This phenomenon in particular, it should go without saying that we are, every single person on our team is ardently in support of equality for all people. We're also in support of learning more past the headlines. So you might read, oh, South Korea has the world's lowest fertility rate. That is true. But just knowing that, again, to your point, Phoebe, without knowing the context, is kind of robbing ourselves of some very important information. So we want to hear from you. Thank you so much to Jace, to Skippy the Prozac Elf. Thank you to Phoebe. Thank you to everybody who tuned in and wrote to us or gave us a call or dropped us a little, what do they call them, a react on social media. Exactly. We especially want to hear from you if you are a Korean national, if you have family there, if you have spent time in that country. Let us know your experience. We try to be easy to find online.
Correct. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff, where we exist on Facebook, where we have our Facebook group. Here's Where It Gets Crazy. On X, FKA, nay, Twitter. That's sort of canceled itself out, but you get the gist. And also on YouTube, where we have video content rolling out every single week. If you want to find us on TikTok or Instagram, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show. But wait, there's more.
There is indeed, as Billy Mays was wont to say, if you would like to call us on a telephone, you can drop a line, reach out and touch faith. Our number 1-833-STDWYTK. You'll hear a familiar voice, a beep like so, beep. And then what happens, Noel? What happens after man. The beep?
Well, yeah, you can tell us, leave us a voice missive, tell us your tale. What's the time limit, Ben? There's a number associated with it. Don't
three
let
minutes.
It freak you the out.
Minute.
3 minutes.
Minutes they shall be, those minutes are three.
That's right. The counting of the minutes shall be three. And those minutes belong to you and you alone. If you want to call back and leave another one, that's cool. Maybe don't do like 5 or 10, but we listen to every single voicemail we get in addition to the next thing I'm going to tell you to hit us up at, which is our good old-fashioned email. We read all of those as well. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.